Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels, and our guest this week in New Rockford, North Dakota, we've got Jamie Rizzavi of Rizzavi Taxidermy. Now, Jamie's just the all-around sportsman, not only a taxidermist, having his hands on a bunch of big trophies all the time. Jamie's a tremendous outdoorsman himself, and one of his specialties is a big northern pike. And Jamie's got some great perspective on the big northern pike opportunities here in North Dakota, and there's definitely some emerging muskie fishing opportunities here. We talk a little bit about that as well. A lot to learn from Jamie Rizzavi of Rizzavi Taxidermy in this week's JMO Podcast. But first, wherever you're getting the podcast, whether you're following along on YouTube, Spotify, Stitcher, or Apple Podcast, make sure to like and subscribe, share with all your fishing friends. We appreciate all the support, and there's comment sections everywhere, so make sure that you're dropping a line for a recommended topic or a future guest on an upcoming show. We appreciate all that. And head over if you want to check out some of our JMO podcast merch on the Jason Mitchell Outdoors website. Click the apparel tab. You can see everything we got there.
Well, yeah, I grew up in North Dakota. I lived out in Rockford, North Dakota my whole life. Small town. I've always liked the small town atmosphere. I grew up hunting and fishing with my family. Done it all my life. I have a passion for it. It's just something that I've always done. I always enjoyed. And it kind of led into the taxidermy field when I was pretty young. I had a great uncle that hunted all over North America, all over Canada, Alaska, whatever. He hunted all the wild sheep and stuff, and he had quite a trophy room. And I remember as a young kid, always checking that out, and always dreamed of doing going on those hunts that he did, and having a trophy room. And it really got me excited about taxidermy at a pretty young age. And I started messing around with it, probably about in junior high, and trying to learn on my own. And back in those days, there wasn't a lot of taxidermists that were willing to share information about it. It was kind of a secret art. And so over all those years, I probably made about every mistake that could be made in taxidermy, and started to figure some things out, and got quite a lot more serious about it after college. I taught school for 32 years and started doing a little taxidermy business back in when I started teaching, and that started to grow, and ended up really kind of expanding into a big full-time business for us. So that's kind of how we got into the taxidermy business.
Yeah, man, and it kind of keeps you hands-on with all those awesome animals, and it gives you something to do in the summer. I suppose being a teacher, you kind of had that. It was what a nice fit, and now you're full-time, but you're kind of a full-time outdoorsman, too. Talk a little bit about that. I mean, you said that your family, so your dad, grandpa, you know, taking you hunting and fishing and stuff like that. I mean, isn't it now kind of being a teacher was probably good for being a taxidermist, but now that you just want to hunt and fish all the time, isn't that kind of bad for being a taxidermist?
Yeah, I got into taxidermy because I like to hunt and fish so much, and it's kind of ironic, but you know, pretty soon I started getting so busy in the shop that I didn't have as many opportunities as I wanted to go hunting and fishing, because I was always working on other people's projects. So yeah, I kind of did two full-time jobs there for a lot of years with the teaching, and now being a retired teacher. Starting to get more opportunities to get back out there hunting and fishing.
When did you start doing all this weird, like big toothy critter fishing? And how does that, how is all of that for you?
Well, yeah, I don't know. We, you know, we grew up fishing for everything, but you know, it was basically walleyes. Every time we went fishing with my dad and stuff, it was mostly walleye fishing. And I just always, envisioned the big pike and the lakes and stuff, and I always wanted to catch those, so yeah, you know, I just kept looking for that, you know, looking for lakes and looking for places to catch big fish. And of course, you know, Canada's not that far away from us, and pretty, you know, we made a few trips up into Canada and caught some pretty nice fish. And now, other than the last couple of years with COVID, we go up to a couple of different lakes every year and chase them up there. But, you know, there are some pretty good pike fishing opportunities. There's even some musky fishing opportunities here in North Dakota. And probably in the last, I don't know, 7-8 years, we've really, really pursued pike, pretty much pike exclusively. You know, I do catch walleyes once in a while, but it's, if I had an opportunity to go fish for myself, it would always be out chasing pike. And actually, North Dakota's got some big pike in it, in, you know, the Missouri River and Sakakawea and Devil's Lake and, you know, Ashtabula. There's some places where you can catch some trophy pike, pike that you definitely be happy to catch up in Canada. You know, we don't have the numbers that they do in Canada, but the quality is there. But it's, you know, the opportunities are limited, and you really got to put some homework into finding them, and definitely put a lot of time into it.
Yeah, man. And I mean, you know, some of the big notables, we've talked about it on this show, like the big pike over on Sakakawea, for sure. Like you said, the Missouri River system, and, you know, even Devil's Lake, there's been some really big fish caught out of there, you know, since the beginning of time. But even in recent years, you know, there's definitely been some quality fish there. I mean, for you, you know, kind of what has been your recipe for success when you're targeting some of the big fish on some of these bodies of water here in North Dakota, and especially here we're sitting now, we're kind of laying this hot and dry summer season to bed, and now we're kind of getting into the fun time of year, another fun time of year to target some of these big hungry species in the fall. Talk about, you know, kind of the recipe for success in the fall in your experience.
Well, you know, we're basically, it's musky fishing for pike, basically. And, you know, we're throwing musky gear, musky tackle, and musky baits and things. You know, we're fishing heavy rods, heavy line, and definitely big baits. And the saying, big baits for big fish is true, you know. But there's a time when we downsize a little bit too, you know. I'm really excited going into this fall here and chasing some of those big fish, because you know, they've been kind of laying low all summer, and they're starting to show up a little bit right now. We've had some days here in the last couple of weeks where we've put some pretty decent fish in the boat, you know, and stuff. So yeah, from here on out, as that water keeps cooling down, it's just going to get better and better.
And, you know, I kind of want to blend in what you mentioned there a little bit ago, that there are some musky fishing opportunities in North Dakota now that are kind of cool. There's some big notable lakes that have some targetable populations of muskies and some tiger muskies, you know, kind of blending them together. Would you contrast those, like, in terms of some of these opportunities here in North Dakota, when you're out there fishing pike, are you catching muskie in the same kind of places in the fall, or kind of contrast the two species a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, you know, muskie, you can catch them all year long in the middle of summer, you know, and I don't like to fish them when the water gets really hot and stuff, but you know, when we're fishing pike and stuff, we, you know, do come across a muskie once in a while. And sometimes we go out west and target muskies, you know, specifically and stuff. But yeah, I mean, in the fall here, they're both in the same area a lot of times, and you know, sometimes it's a nice surprise that you're fishing pike and along comes a muskie. So it, you know, the opportunities in North Dakota are, they're becoming a little bit more commonplace, and I really hope that you know, I really appreciate our Game and Fish for stocking those muskies, and you know, and continued efforts in some of those lakes are really starting to pay off. I think we're getting an opportunity to chase those in a state here where normally we had to go to Minnesota or, you know, other places to get those. And you know, I think, you know, they're a real special fish, you know, and I think we have an opportunity to fish those here, but we need to really be smart about it and take care of those fish. You know, they're, you know, you can really hurt the population of those muskies if you don't take care of them, respect those fish.
Yeah, I mean, it takes a long time to grow a big fish, and that's true probably with any species. But certainly, you know, when you're talking those big muskies, those big pike. It just takes so many years to grow them. And then even if you they do live those years, if they don't have, you know, there's just so many other factors involved that, gosh, you know, it'd just be tough to imagine you'd go out there and, you know, not handle them properly. And that being said, we probably don't have time in this show to really talk handling to a T, but what a good message just to make sure that, yeah, I mean, it's just one of those deals where when you're talking these big fish, you know, it almost needs to be understood that you got to get, you know, got to have the right gear. You got to have a big net. You got to have bolt cutters. You got to have, you know, if you're going to use that big musky tackle, whether you're fishing muskies or pike, got to have this stuff. No doubt about it. You know, and that being said too, you know, one thing you and I talked about, you know, now is probably as good a time as any, because I'd really want to kind of hear your version of it is, you know, you're a taxidermist, you know, and it's getting into that popular time of year when, you know, people are going out targeting big fish. I mean, this is fall time of year is not for, you know, just, you know, kind of your fair weather guy. These are the hardcore fishermen that are going out, and a lot of big fish that end up going to taxidermy get caught in the fall. Now for you, you know, talk a little bit about some of your offerings as a taxidermist and maybe just, you know, just some of that portion of the conversation. I'm probably not going to say it or ask the question properly, but you know what I'm getting at. You know, just talk about taxidermy when it comes to these big fish, kind of the do's and don'ts, how to, you know, how to take the right picture and make the right measurements, but also why that's important to, you know, give these fish an opportunity to keep swimming.
Yeah. Well, we only offer reproduction fish replicas. And I certainly don't think there's anything wrong if someone catches a fish of a lifetime and taking that fish and killing it and taking it to a taxidermist. I personally, and it's my own thoughts and stuff, but you know, I got a lot of respect for those fish, and you know, and it's an incredible feeling to get one of those into the boat. But you know, actually, in my opinion, holding on to the tail when they're in the water and releasing them and watching those big fish swim away, knowing they're back in the lake, you know, as exciting to me as anything. So therefore, when we with fish taxidermy, we only go with the fish reproductions, and so you know, those fish can swim away and be caught again. Someone else can catch them. A young kid can catch it. You know, it's a something that can be a resource that can be reused. So yeah, that's how we got into the reproduction with the fish taxidermy.
Yeah, I mean, just to talk a little bit about it, I don't really have a whole lot of fish on my wall. That probably says a little bit about me as a fisherman. But that being said, if I do get out and I catch a big fish, it can be any kind of fish. It could be a crappie, it could be a bluegill, or like we're talking with you and your passion with the big, you know, muskies and northerns, you know, what is kind of the protocol if you're going to get a reproduction made? What, as a taxidermist, it does, what's the best case scenario? What's the information that you could get from somebody that is going to give you the best opportunity to really reproduce that fish as accurately as possible, the way they want to remember it?
Yeah, you know, it's actually pretty simple. You know, if you had a bump board or a tape measure in your boat, and you can get a, you know, a key measurement would be the length. For sure. And it's nice to get a circumference, to have a flexible tape measure around the belly and the greatest circumference of the fish. And those two things right there are going to tell us what we need to know in order to get the right size blank to create that fish. We don't need to know the weight. You know, sometimes scales might be inaccurate or whatever, but if you have that length and that circumference, we can get the right size. The other thing that'd be real important, especially with, you know, fish like muskies and pike and to some extent walleyes and things, and is to have, you know, nice clear photos of the fish, you know, and you know, you can always take a picture of yourself holding the fish, you know, everybody wants a photo like that, but just even a close-up of the fish, and you know, different fish have different scale or you know, color patterns and things like that, and you know fins, they can have show a lot of detail too, and make it not just a generic fish reproduction, but a fairly quite accurate one of the fish that you caught. So yeah, length measurements, circumference, and photo is all we need, you know. And it's pretty neat because we've had a lot of calls lately and stuff about, hey, I caught this big fish years ago and I released it or whatever. And could you replicate that for me? And yeah, if they got the picture of it and happen to know the measurements or even close measurements, you know, we can come up with that. Even had the one where someone's grandfather caught a big fish back in the 50s, you know, and of course, back in those days, a lot of those fish got cut up and eaten and stuff, but it, you know, we can even recreate a fish that someone caught, you know, 40, 50 years ago and kind of a cool memory that something like their grandfather caught back then. So it's pretty simple. It's, you know, you can come up with a good quality amount with just those things.
Yeah, man, I think that's good information. You know, I mean, it's just, you know, for whatever, the average guy like myself that's going to, you know, get more and more into fishing. And I think that's kind of the sign of the times too is, you know, having these discussions about fall fishing, you know, historically, like I said before, it's typically, you know, kind of the hardcore anglers that get out. But it seems like there's more and more hardcore anglers out there now too. So it's, you know, it's just kind of one of those times of year where having these conversations is just good so that everybody's ready to go with all that. Have a bunk board in the boat. To even slide back into the fishing, man, I really want to dig into your passion on this big fishing. And I know you're kind of a technical guy. So I really want to find out some of your recommendations on everything in gear and just, you know, kind of what your thoughts are on all of it, the opportunities here in North Dakota. Now, you've traveled to do some fishing, and I think that this is true with other species as well, that North Dakota, you know, fish and walleyes on reservoirs in North Dakota is certainly different than going, you know, to the Great Lakes or Mille Lacs, you know, other places in the world. With the big pike and the muskies, would you say that you know, your experience fishing elsewhere has taught you a lot about how to target them here in North Dakota? Or have you kind of had some fun figuring out some nuances that are just really good, good stuff, good patterns that are, you know, live here in North Dakota exclusively on some of these bodies of water?
Yeah, I've had some good friends that I fished with and talk to a lot, guys that have chased muskies for a lot longer than I have, and pike fishermen too, and stuff. So, you know, I've gotten a lot of help from those guys over the years and stuff. And I've gotten an opportunity to fish with those guys and in other places too, on big fish waters in Minnesota and Canada and stuff. But yeah, I mean, you can get as technical as you want when it comes to chasing these, but you certainly don't have to spend a pile of money. But, you know, if I'm fishing muskies specifically, you know, I'll be throwing a, you know, like a 9'6" Thorn Brothers extra heavy predator rod and things, you know, and a heavy, you know, a good Shimano Tranks reel. But you know, and then when I'm fishing pike, you know, we'll downsize that a little bit, and be throwing like a 7'6", 7'9" St. Croix rod, and you know, but basically with the same reels. But you know, either one, we're usually using like 65 pound line, and you know, we tie our own leaders, fluorocarbon leaders, usually about 130 pound leaders that we make on ourselves. But you know, it just depends too. Sometimes we're chasing the pike, and you know, they don't want that big lure, you know, a 6'8", 10" lure. So you know, we'll downsize sometimes, and we're using basically heavy bass gear, same, you know, rigged the same way with, you know, 30 pound line and you know, a bait casting rod and reel that, you know, that you would fish a heavier one, but that one that you would normally be used for bass. And that can be a lot of fun catching a big pike on too.
And I mean, just kind of the patterns or kind of the vibe when you go on a trip somewhere, do you find yourself fishing differently to target fish versus some of these opportunities here in North Dakota? Or would you say that North Dakota kind of stacks up, like the fall fish patterns, kind of the same as anywhere you've ever been?
Yeah, it's not too much different, you know. And we got a real special lake up in northern Manitoba, and you know, to catch, you know, mid to upper 40-inch pike on it. But when we come home to North Dakota, you know, especially in the fall here, we're throwing identical baits. You know, we use Vart Zonker McRubbers, you know, and 8-inch, 10-inch big paddle tails. Another really good bait that's kind of turned into a favorite is the Phantom Soft Tails, we'll use a lot of times like a 6-inch, sometimes up to the 7.5-inch. But, you know, other times when the fish are a little tougher and things, we'll downsize that into a 4-inch. So, but yeah, our fish in North Dakota, you know, we've got real good quality fish. You know, a guy can go out and if you look hard enough, you can find 40-inch pike, and you might not catch them every time out, but you got a pretty good opportunity on some of these lakes. So a 40-inch pike here is the same as a 40-inch pike in Canada, and they'll hit the same thing.
And, you know, even if we were to just pick on, say, like Devil's Lake, it's not too far down the road from you. I know you fish it a fair amount. It's certainly over the years, whether for, you know, perch and walleyes and big pike. If we're talking big pike, you know, what kind of is that fall pattern for you?
Yeah, they're just coming back in shallow again. We're catching them, you know, somewhat close to the same places we caught them in the spring. I really like, points leading into bays in the fall. If you find weeds on them, if you find a rocky point with weeds on them, you're gold. But, you know, and it's, yeah, they're just back in the shallows. They've got that cool waters back there. They're aggressive. We're basically fishing them almost the same way we did in the spring.
Yeah. And for you, the pattern might be a little bit more predictable, but do the spots change a little bit? I mean, here we are now in North Dakota again. I've repeated myself this exact statement so many times this year that I've beat it to death. We're in a drought. A lot of these bodies of water are down. You know, the water levels are down. Do you think that that kind of changes patterns altogether, or does it just kind of change spots, but the pattern stays true?
Well, it's basically, I mean, we had a little bit of a dry summer last year towards the end and stuff, but and water levels were down on Devils and other lakes too. But we kind of fished real similar to what we did the year before. And, you know, now we're down quite a bit more from the year before. So I'm actually interested to see how it's all going to play out. You know, the water cooled down. It's dropped about 10 degrees and stuff. And, we've been out after these pike here already, and it's kind of shaping up somewhat similar. You know, I guess can't totally answer that question right now because we're just barely getting into this fall period. I'm hoping it's going to be very similar. You know, I think it'll be very similar spots. Obviously, maybe far a little bit away, you know, the shoreline's receding and stuff, so it's definitely not going to be in the exact same spot. But, you know, these points off of these bays and where this deep water they've been spending the summer in, those pikes should be coming back up in this, you know, very similar areas.
So you think, I mean, you know, talking about forecasting a little bit and not knowing the future, but your process of elimination, to just talk about that, your strategy for what you're hoping for is success this fall.
Well, you know, I don't mind not catching fish. I mean, I can go for a long time without catching fish, and you know, you're constantly eliminating water and stuff. But I intend to go back to, you know, pretty much the same pattern, the same places I did in the past. And if that doesn't pay off, you know, I love fishing. I love looking for fish. So there's never any wasted time on the lake, and you're always learning. Even, you know, when you catch fish, you think you know it, but when you don't catch fish, you're learning a lot more than when you are catching fish. So, you know, it's I'm really excited for this year, and yeah, it's I think they're going to be fairly close to where they've always been.
The JMO podcast is sponsored by Long Haul Trucking. Long Haul's always looking for more skilled professional CDL drivers to join their team. They're a people-first company, and it shows. Their employee-owned, asset-based fleet of over 350 Conestogas is among industry leaders in pay and benefits geared towards long-term success and growth for company drivers and owner-operators. If you're a professional driver or a company that wants to ship product with the best in the business, get a hold of Long Haul at 1-800-255-5153 or find them online at longhaultrucking.com. Long Haul, running on the power of promises kept. And to flip over and continue keeping some of the musky opportunities in the conversation, I mean, for you, you know, getting out after these fall muskies, now, to be fair, you know, North Dakota Muskies haven't really been a big conversation to be had in the Muskie world for a long time because, you know, a lot of these, like you said, it's just some robust stocking from the North Dakota Game and Fish. And a lot of these fish are just kind of now getting to where they're fun to target. So it's kind of a new conversation, fun to have it with you. I mean, are you going to spend some time specifically on Muskies this fall, you know, and if so, you know, do you kind of have a little bit different process of elimination there? Because realistically, you probably don't have 25, 30 plus years of memories like you do with the pike.
Yeah, well, we're definitely going to go chase muskies specifically, you know, this fall too. And if I had to, you know, pick one or the other, I would call myself a pike fisherman for sure, but a muskie opportunist. But, you know, there's say Audubon out there is a you know, a really cool lake. And if you go out there, I mean, the lake somewhat sets up, like, say maybe you're going to Lake of the Woods or someplace, you know, where there's underwater humps and different things like that. I basically would go fish them very similar to how we fish muskies up on Lake of the Woods. So, yeah. I'm really looking forward to that too. And I don't know, I'm really thankful that we've got the opportunity to chase those fish here. I really hope our Game and Fish continues with that, with what they've been doing. They started something that's really cool. And, you know, there's people from North Dakota that, you know, will travel to Minnesota to chase these fish. And it's so neat to have that opportunity close to home. And, you know, it may never be what Minnesota is or has been in the past too, but they're just such a cool fish.
And I mean, yeah, I agree 110%. Like you say, it's kind of evolving and it's going to be its own thing. It's going to be its own opportunity for the fishermen that are either from here or want to come here and target some of our fish. And, you know, your chances of catching a 53 incher probably aren't the same as, you know, going up to some pretty choice locations in Canada or whatever, or, you know, some specific bodies, you know, known bodies of water in Minnesota, Wisconsin, things like that. But, you know, everything is relative. And, you know, if you catch a 40 incher where there's not many 40 inchers, you know, that's kind of a cool thing.
Some of those fish, you know, you've heard of recently, reaching that, you know, mid 40 mark, and, you know, they got to be taken care of. You know, it takes a lot for a fish to get to 40 inches or 45. And, you know, there's got to be a lot of luck involved and a lot of, you know, someone catch a mid 40, you know, take care of it and get that back in the water, because they can't make it to 50 if they don't survive past 45.
That, you know, fish handling and that stuff it really just needs to be a part of every muskie fishing, big pike fishing conversation, and even big walleye fishing, you know, anything big, to be fair. You know, we preach that all the time. Just, you got to protect big genetics is one big thing that, you know, you're harvesting that particular fish in that scenario. If that fish didn't make it, you know, and you kept it on purpose or whatever it is. And again, not anybody that wants to catch one in mountain one. I'm not against that either whatsoever. But I agree that, you know, there's humongous value in being conservative with these resources and with the reproduction opportunities nowadays. You know, it definitely gives you an opportunity to catch a big fish and maintain that lasting memory on your wall, and still let that fish swim. And, you know, and speaking of, I do want to get your version of the story about a pretty cool, pretty well-known walleye that you caught multiple times. I need to just get that story out of you here right away. What the heck was the deal there? I know you weren't targeting walleyes every time you caught that fish. I mean, what's the whole story there going start to finish? What were you doing out there?
My son Lucas and I were chasing pike last spring, not this spring, but the previous year in 2020. We were fishing and catching some fish, and my son Lucas, he's got a pretty good size pike on at the time. And I was actually going to, you know, reel my line in quick here and help him out netting that fish. And about that split second, I had a hit. And I thought, well, this is a decent sized pike, but not great. And I was going to kind of horse it into the boat. And I was bringing it in. And I got close to the boat and I looked down and it's a, you know, a big walleye. We catch those big walleyes. It's surprising how often we do catch a big walleye on these big pike baits, musky baits. But anyway, I looked down the water and I hollered to Lucas. I said, Lucas, I got a giant walleye on here. Well, he took care of his fish, you know, real quick and got in, and we netted that fish, and it was so cool. We brought it into the boat, and it's, you know, what makes it so easy to identify is the dorsal fin was cut off like a quarter inch above its back in a, just almost a perfectly straight line. You couldn't have cut it any straighter with the scissors. And we measured that fish, and it was 30 3/4 inches, and just a big, beautiful fish. And, you know, and so we got nice pictures of it and all that, and measured it and stuff. But then we released that fish, and, you know, just watching that big walleye swim away, it was just this cool feeling. It's like watching a giant pike swim away. And I thought, well, that was pretty awesome, you know. And then that was in April of last summer. And then we were fishing the same part of the lake in October. Actually, I was out there myself towards the end of October, and I was probably almost a half mile away, and fishing the exact same bait, only a smaller version of it. It was a Phantom Softail 4-inch, and I caught, you know, had a decent fish on, brought it to the boat. I could see it. It was another big walleye. And then I got the net in the water, and I was able to get the fish. As the fish rolled into the net, it rolled over perfectly, and I could see that the dorsal fin was cut off. I knew before it even hit the bottom of the net, it was the same fish. And that was a half mile away, 3 months apart or 4 months apart, whatever. It was just so cool to see that. And I just wondered how many other fishermen have fished, you know, both those areas and the area in between, and what are the odds that I'd catch that exact same fish again. And of course, definitely released it again and stuff. But it just, you know, kind of a really neat thing is that it just proves what, you know, catch and release is all about. You know, maybe somebody else caught it in the summer. I don't know. But, you know, someone else could catch it again. And it's just really a special feeling. No, that fish is still there. And trust me, I've been in that same area this year quite a few times. And I would love to catch it again. I doubt it'll happen, but I'm sure it's trying.
That's awesome. Yeah, I agree. It just, you know, that story just kind of epitomizes, you know, what we're talking about with big muskies and big pike. What a cool deal, not only just to catch the fish. There's some pictures up. There's no question that's the same fish. And I highly doubt anybody else caught it, because I don't think anybody would catch a 30 3/4 inch walleye and not at least take a picture of it and have that emerge somewhere. And then that, to have that dorsal fin the way it is. But I don't know, I kind of want to even bounce back into some more of that technical information. We're kind of bouncing back and forth, but I tell you what, talking about hunting and fishing with a taxidermist, I think it kind of goes back and forth all the time anyway. So, you know, any more technical information, you know, when you're breaking down water, you know, you probably got a lot of memories or a lot of experience on a lot of these North Dakota lakes that have the pike and have the, you know, the muskies. And coming into this fall, do you have anything in mind that you know you're going to try something new or try to learn something new? Is there anything that you're trying to dial in?
I'm always looking for that new bait that, you know, new hot bait or something like that. But I don't know. I think the thing I'm looking for is, you know, I just want that once in a lifetime fish. And, you know, there's been a 50 incher caught on Devil's Lake, and at least one that I know of or whatever. And you hear about them out on Sakakawea too. I guess that's what I'm looking for. I just going to keep searching for that big fish. And, you know, to say you're going to catch a 50-inch pike is almost a dream anywhere you go, much less in North Dakota. But well, that's what I'm looking for, and basically keep doing what I'm doing. But you know, I'm going to kind of expand my reach, I guess, a little bit and try to get out west on Skakwea some more. And I know those fish are there, but the, you know, that's just such a big body of water. And I think things on Skakwea change so much, you know, water levels change, you know, drastically out there. And, you know, there's such a big bait fish population. The smelt could be in one area and they're gone and whatever. But I don't know. I believe that big water, big fish mentality, you know, they're out there. I think there's, you know, like we fish Fort Peck a little bit, you know, for lake trout and stuff. But, you know, Fort Peck's got big everything in it and big walleyes and gigantic pike in it and stuff. So I think, you know, we're going to look for trying to do a few different things like that.
Right on, man. Right on. And for you, when you go out on a place like, you know, Sakakawea, one conversation, or well, every conversation about walleyes on Sakakawea includes talking about how much they move, you know, here today, gone tomorrow. Do you find that with the pike as well, or do you find the pike to be a little bit more consistent and a little bit more territorial? Or, you know, just kind of that vibe for you when you head over to like Sakakawea, for example, you know, kind of what do you think is kind of the mojo behind that with when you're targeting the big pike?
Yeah, I mean, well, the one thing about the pike is that they're going to be shallow if you're going to catch them. People catch big pike when they're trolling, you know, cranks deeper for walleyes and stuff all through the summer. But if you're going to go specifically fish for pike, you're going to be shallow. You're going to be in the bays, you know, the big bays that come off of Sakakawea, you know, on the east end, both on the north and south side. You know, I think, you know, you hear of big fish caught there in the winter and stuff too. So I don't know. I think I'm just going to, you know, fish the shallow backwater and, you know, and points coming into those. And you know, we do go out there and fish it a little bit already and stuff, but I hope to learn a lot more about it anyway this fall.
This time of year, what would be some cool tips or just some info to pass along to anybody that might be getting a trophy that they're going to bring to a taxidermist? Just some handling acts that, you know, if they do catch a fish, that doesn't swim away, you know, what's the best thing to do there that your taxidermist is really going to appreciate?
Well, when it comes to fish, you know, wrapping them in a wet towel and freezing them in a plastic bag, you can't go wrong. It's locked into a block of ice and that'll last for a long time, and your taxidermist would be real happy with you when you bring in something like that. Otherwise, definitely don't put it in the freezer without sealing it up well, and or they dry out really fast in the freezer. So that's basically about it with fish. I guess, you know, one of the real neat things that we have an opportunity to do here in North Dakota is chase velvet whitetails and mule deer. And, you know, a lot of states season opens much later. They can't shoot a deer in velvet. And so with velvet antlers, you got one choice, get it into the freezer as fast as you can. So make sure, you know, be prepared. You know, hopefully you got freezer space for something like that if you can't get it straight to a taxidermist, you know, right away. Now, another thing that's really important now, and that's with the CWD, is that, you know, game heads can't be transported, you know, across some state lines and even across some county lines anymore. So, you know, and it's not hard, but, you know, it's gotten to the point where hunters are going to have to be able to handle some of the caping, you know, of their animal, because you can't transport, you know, the skulls across without, you know, it has to be a clean skull plate on a set of antlers. You can't have the whole skull going. So people are sometimes intimidated by, oh, I have to cape out this deer completely myself. And it's not hard. It's not hard at all. I always tell people, you do it once and you're an expert. So there's a lot of YouTube videos out there. Just, you know, search on YouTube for a video on caping a deer. And I mean, you watch it once, watch it a couple times, you know, have a good knife. I use Havilon's scalpel bladed knives. They're perfect for the job. Yeah, you watch that a couple of videos and you can handle that. Any hunter could handle that themselves. I think that's becoming almost a necessity, is that if somebody wants to get their deer mounted, is that you got to be able to handle those things. If you're hunting, you know, out of state, or even say someone from the eastern North Dakota going out west into a unit that's got CWD.
And like handling hides and capes, say you got that caping thing down, but maybe you're a little bit backcountry and all you've got is a cooler with some ice in it, you know, so just getting it to the freezer right away isn't the deal. Is there a few things that a guy should know to be a little bit more nuanced on, say, taking care of a cape, you know, that's just going to be on ice for a couple of days? You know, can you get it wet? Should you keep it dry? I mean, what are some of that, what's some of that nuance?
Yeah. Yeah. Once you get that cape off of the head, I recommend, you know, cooling it down, because, you know, it's got that body temperature from the animal. But once you take it off, maybe turn it inside out, let that heat escape from the hide. Then put it back into a plastic bag and keep it away from water. But you got to keep it on ice. So you don't want it sloshing around in the bottom of a cooler with a bunch of melted ice. So I recommend like having some bags of ice or blocks of ice, you know, even have those in a separate plastic bag, and then lay your bag with the hide in it on top of that, but keep it dry. So as far as blood on it and things like that, that's not a problem. That all comes out, that all gets cleaned up. But, you know, keep them as dry as you can and as cold as you can. And if you put them in the cooler and say you're out in the Badlands on a camping trip hunting mule deer, I mean, you've got a little bit of time if you keep that thing cold, and then when you get back, or as soon as you can, get it into a freezer then.
Golden, man. I think that's good information for anybody to know. Anything else?
I'm pretty lucky, you know. My son Lucas is, he's, you know, we fish together all the time and stuff, but he's got the same passion for the big pike. So we have a lot of fun. It doesn't matter if it's on the ice in the winter, or shore from spring, or in the boat, you know, and it's really fun to fish with someone that's got that same passion. And he's certainly got it. He loves those big pike just as much as I do.
Yeah, man. And when you do nail a monster, what a memory that's made. I'll let you back to it, dude. Thank you so much for the time, Jamie. I really appreciate it. We'll be in touch.
Yep, take care. Bye.